are listening to the Intercoastal Podcast, part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Intercoastal Podcast. I'm your co-host, Natasha Lai.
And I'm Daquan Mickens. And for today's episode, we have Drs. Marion and Ray Rollins with us to talk about the Fort Fremont Historical Preserve. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very excited to have you both joining us. Before we jump into Fort Fremont, though, can you give us a little bit of your background in history with Fort Fremont?
Well, we started out originally as a master naturalist project, and because of the rich history there, the group decided we really needed a Friends of Fort Fremont. So we started in 2007 and just kind of built on that. Mary and I are both engineers, PhD engineers, and spent our life as research engineers for the Corps of Engineers, so we got tagged to do a lot of the historical and infrastructure issues there. And we've grown to recognize this as a really interesting, unique little piece of history that before this we didn't know very much about.
It's been a really interesting trip here, learning about Fort Fremont, because everybody in town told us there's no history there. But in actuality, it's really very interesting, and it was a very innovative time in fort construction and the equipment they had there.
That's awesome. I bet your guys' backgrounds also made it so you were able to find things that other people might have missed.
Probably so.
We probably look at the fort in a way probably different from many people. That's true. We're into the concrete and steel and all that type of thing quite a bit that nobody else really cares a whole lot about.
That's awesome. Love to hear it.
Yeah, that's really interesting how you guys have that certain perspective. Not everybody who comes out there to Fort Fremont comes out and see. I know for me, when I came out to look at it, it wasn't like, oh man, all this concrete that they put in one place. It was more like, wow, this is a creative landscape idea and place to come to.
Definitely. So what is your exact role with the Fort Fremont Historic Preserve currently?
Marin and I do a lot of the historical research, and we've been making suggestions on infrastructure issues. The fort belongs to the county, and the Friends of Fort Fremont with whom we're associated are simply volunteers that help out the county in whatever ways they request us to. We also do tours, act as docents for visitors to come out there. We have a visitor center out there, so we help staff that, and we help take people around to see what's out there. We design exhibits. So we're involved in a lot of the historical side of stuff and also education and training, teaching, that type of thing.
Very cool.
Okay, yeah. And as a visitor coming to Fort Fremont, what can we expect to see and do when we come to that? I know you mentioned some of the educational programs.
Sure. When you come out to Fort Fremont, you're going to see a beautiful Beaufort County gym. It's got a very nice park there with native trees in it, sweeping views of the Beaufort River, Hilton Head Island, and Paris Island. There's a beach there at Fort Fremont. We have examples of maritime forest that you can see both on Hilton Head and Paris Island, and you can look at the trees up close there at Fort Fremont. We have a number of the trees identified with ID tags on them for folks that aren't familiar with the trees here. Also, there's a lot of history out there. The History Center has just opened recently, and it's very impressive. We have a fantastic diorama in there built by a local master modeler, and it's of the entire fort property. So it shows all the other buildings in addition to the gun batteries that are still there. We have about, I think there are 29 or 30 other buildings that were actually on Fort Fremont, including the barracks and officer housing, engineering administration, the mess hall, that type thing. So it's really, really a neat diorama to give you a feel for what it would have looked like had you been able to walk onto the fort back in the early 1900s. There's also out there a picnic pavilion that the county has built that overlooks the water. It has tables and benches, so it's a great place for families and friends to come and visit and enjoy the great outdoors and get a bit of history while they're there.
I'd like to add to that also on that diorama. It's very unique. I don't know of any other museum or fort that has gone and recreated the environment that existed in these coastal forts at that time. And to do this, we got from the National Archives quartermaster records that had photographs taken in 1905 of each building. So we have a photographic record. Then we have engineering drawings of many of the buildings, all the batteries, that type of thing. We also have four photographs that were taken, one from the river and three from different angles on the fort. So even when you look at the diorama, the trees you see located in the living areas, those are actually accurately represented to be approximate what we could pick out of the photographs. So it's a real good concept of what the fort looked like in 1905.
It's so cool what technology can do for us now, like having those photographs and being able to create that diorama off of that. That's amazing.
I would agree. If you guys haven't had a chance to go out there to Fort Fremont and see like their wonderful display of different historical facts and what they have in there, including the diorama, it's an amazing sight to see all the history in one spot. Then when you go outside of that and you see the actual landscape in the fort, it's amazing just to see all that in one area. It's truly breathtaking.
That's awesome. What was the years that the fort was built, and then and what was its primary use when it was originally created?
Fort construction began in 1898. It's part of what was called the Endicott era forts. These were built at the end of from roughly 1890 to World War I as coastal protection to replace all the antiquated forts that were built before the Civil War. And what triggered this is in 1895, dry dock opened over at Port Royal Naval Station. And this was the only dry dock south of Norfolk that was big enough to take the new battleships and armored cruisers that were coming into the Navy at that time. In January 1898, the Maine blew up in Havana. Now we're getting ready to go to war with Spain, and we'll have a fleet fighting in Cuba. And this shipyard is the closest shipyard you can bring damaged ships back for major repairs. At that point, they realized they had to defend this, and they began a rapid construction. Fort Fremont was authorized in February 1898. Mines were in place by that summer. By June, the first real permanent guns were in place. We had temporary batteries in place before that, and all the gun batteries were ready to operate by March 1899. By then, of course, the war had ended, and it was there primarily to defend the Navy station and the dry dock in particular. Construction continued as things were added for several years. In 1901, transition started to move the Navy Yard to Charleston. In 1909, the new dry dock in Charleston opened, and now there was no longer really a mission for Fort Fremont. So in 1911, the troops that were here were transferred to Texas, and eventually this would all be sold to private owners.
So interesting to know, like, all that happened. They built this fort and created this, and then nothing ended up happening.
No, just during the Spanish-American War, it was manned, and they had mines in the river, and then it provided the coastal defense for the era it was in place.
That's crazy. Were they able to get the mines out of the river after this was all over?
Oh, yes. The mines are too dangerous to remove, and these are electric. They're not contact mines. They're electrically detonated, so when they to remove them, they blew them in place.
That makes sense. I was just going to say, I could imagine that could make for some interesting stories if they didn't take those out.
And even if they left them in there, or when they blew them up, you know that there was a lot of good fishing around, because you're bound to be a lot of fish that got blown into the air.
Yeah.
All the restaurants were like, oh, this is nice. No fishing today. It's all done for us.
Exactly.
So we talked about who were stationed at Fort Fremont, and we talked about, you know, the war that was happening. What was life like at Fort Fremont?
It was a typical military installation. Of course, they had the regular duties that were required to run the fort. Things like guard duty, KP, drilling, marksmanship, first aid, PT, those type things. But they also had, because of the large guns out there, a lot of training on these large guns, because it took a whole huge crew to operate the guns. It took several hours for everyone each day to practice on these guns. Then they had to do maintenance on the guns, and in addition to the regular cleaning and maintenance that you would do on any gun, they also had to oil these guns to prevent rust from forming on the guns as they sat there in the sea breezes from the salt water. So it was rigorous duty, but it wasn't bad. Most of the work was completed by about 3 p.m. every day, and this at the Fort Fremont life is generally considered to be very good duty. And in fact, Fort Fremont had one of the lowest desertion rates in the Army at the time.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's an impressive feat.
Isn't it? And in their spare time, the soldiers participated in a minstrel group that traveled around Beaufort County singing to various organizations. They also had a very popular baseball team, and they were well-traveled, played against all the local teams here. We've actually located newspaper articles about the Fort Fremont team traveling to Hampton and playing in front of about 700 baseball fans. This is back in the early 1900s. which just so amazed me.
Yeah, that is amazing.
You have to remember, too, that there were no bridges from Fort Fremont into Beaufort, so every bit of travel from the fort had to be by boat. So to get to Hampton, they would come to Beaufort by boat and then catch the train up to Hampton, I suppose.
And That had to be crazy.
Yeah, that had to be quite a trip because it's an hour by car now.
Right.
They also had a lot of outings for hunting and fishing, either the soldiers at the fort or with people from the town. There are reports that we found of the fort launch being brought into town to pick up some of the townsfolks to go on hunting trips out to some of the other islands. And there are times that the Beaufort citizens would come to the fort, pick up some of the soldiers there and take them out for fishing trips or hunting trips around. So it sounds like there was a lot of interaction between the city of Beaufort and the Fort Fremont soldiers.
No kidding. I'm starting to understand why that desertion rate was so low.
We might mention that these are Coast Artillery soldiers. As you develop this very complex, sophisticated fire systems for these coastal batteries, they required skills very different from the field artillery that supported the infantry cavalry. So in 1901, the artillery was split into field artillery and coast artillery. And this was a coast artillery company of about 109 soldiers stationed here with a captain and two lieutenants. And they were pretty much the technical elites of the army of that era. They had very specialized skills. They had to be good with electricity, mechanics, had to be very closely trained. They had to have a lot of optical measurements to do their sighting. They communicated by phone and the forerunner of the facsimile machine. So it was a very different technical army organization from infantry, cavalry, field artillery.
That's awesome. So I'm curious, it sounds like Fort Fremont never actually made it into battle, did it?
No, none of the Endicott era forts did. In fact, we were not unique in doing this kind of fort. Forts similar with similar technology were built around the world. And up to about World War I, fortifications on the ground using this kind of technology were superior to the Navy battleships and cruisers. They simply did not try, nobody anywhere around the world tried to challenge these forts. By World War I, that would change. The Navy made major advances. So by World War I, this was marginally obsolescent. And World War I aircraft come along. And at that point, this kind of coastal defense technology becomes obsolete. And in fact, by World War II, most of the coast defense artillery units are now going to be air defense artillery. So technology is changing. So from about 1890 to World War I, this was the dominant technology. Started to fade in World War I. And after World War I, it was obsolete. That's how fast military technology can change.
That's insane. Because that's not that big of a time difference, really.
No. And the same thing happened to the ships, the big battleships. The USS Olympia, which was the flagship Dewey had at the Battle of Manila Bay, when it was launched, I think it was 1895, it was considered a gem of technology. It set speed records going to Asia. By World War I, it would no longer be adequate for anything other than convoy escort duty. It was too far out of date. So you see, the whole military technology is changing during this period very rapidly.
Yeah, that is very interesting. Just a question. Who is Fort Fremont named after?
It's named after John Fremont. He was born in Savannah. Was a brilliant mathematical student at the College of Charleston. He got in and out of trouble. He ended up as a lieutenant in the Topographical Corps. Those were the people going out west to make maps and explore the West, and made a total of 8 or 9 expeditions to the West, drawing maps and setting routes. The Mormons would use his maps to go to Utah. All the people going to Oregon, all the settlers going west there would use his maps. He was known as the Great Explorer. He would end up in California and be instrumental. He was still part of the Army, would be instrumental in seizing that portions of California for the United States from the Spanish, from the Mexicans. He would become the first, he would also get court-martialed there because he wouldn't accept orders from an admiral. He made and lost several fortunes in the gold industry out there. He became the first senator. He was married to Jesse
Benton
Fremont, who was just as fascinating as he was. There's some fascinating couple that kind of fallen out of history. You don't hear much about him anymore. In 1854, he runs as a Republican candidate for president. And he's the first national candidate to advocate abolishing slavery. He ran on a slogan of free men, free soil, Fremont. He lost, but he and his wife were major abolitionists. So it's rather appropriate that Fort Fremont was named after him. And it's just down the street from Penn Center, one of the great new free schools for the newly freed blacks after the Civil War. He would go on to be a general in the Civil War. He was put in command of Missouri. He promptly freed the slaves. Lincoln was trying to keep Missouri in the Union. So Lincoln countermanded that order that the slaves were free, relieved Fremont. He went to the East, where he took command of an army, and he ran into Stonewall Jackson. Unlike many Union generals, got whipped.
Yeah.
He would not agree to serve under somebody he considered not of equal rank and stature of him, so he didn't serve any longer in the army after that. After the war, he pretty much goes into a doldrums of depression, doesn't do anything, dies in poverty, and largely kept his family together because his wife was writing books about his Western exploration. That's what they actually lived on. A very complex man that did some great things and made some great blunders. But as a person, he and his wife were just absolutely fascinating couple. They're probably the first of the real power couples in our history.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it sounds like John Fremont really deserved the name of Fort Fremont, and it's well deserved.
I would have to agree. I am going to have to go look him and his wife up and do a little more research on my own about him, because I'm very intrigued now hearing about all of this. So that's really awesome.
He was definitely a fascinating person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sounds like it.
No kidding. So I'm curious now, because obviously the fort ended up being closed eventually and then sold off to like private partners, but now you guys have more control over it. What has it been throughout the years since it was a fort?
Well, since it was a fort, different people owned portions of it. And at one time, there was actually a home built on top of one of the batteries, on top of one of the gun pits, which was kind of interesting. Yeah. One of our Friends of Fort Fremont ladies was a school teacher here in the 1950s, I think, and visited one of her students who lived in the house on top of the fort. So that was kind of an interesting thing.
Yeah. All the buildings on the fort proper where the soldiers lived, the mess halls and all that, those were all dismantled by the Army. A lot of that was salvaged or sold. The only thing that remains is they built a brick hospital, and that today is a private residence. After it was all this property was sold, that would eventually become a hunting fishing camp for a while. And the folks that own it now have owned it since the 1950s and have got quite a complete history. They, upon occasion, will open it up for public tours for special events.
The county bought the property where we have the Friends of Fort, or the Fort Fremont Preserve, in about 2004. And they had it, fenced it in, so there was a fence around to separate it from the homes around it, and started really opening it and trying to do some things with it about the time that we came along as the Master Naturalist group that founded the Friends of Fort Fremont to work with the county to try to come up with some activities and things going on out there. So we the Friends have sponsored some school groups to come out and had a builder, well, he was a craftsman who came out and led a summer camp for some of the kids one summer, and they built replicas of some of the buildings out there at the fort from the plans that we had. We give the Friends of Fort Fremont have given tours out there since the very beginning, really. Whenever the county wants us to or asks us to, we'll give tours to local groups or traveling groups, school groups, and so forth.
Unfortunately, we don't have the manning for the visitor center with enough docents that we would like. So it's only open for 4 hours on Friday and 6 hours on Saturday. We are busily trying to recruit more docents. So if anybody listening would like to be a docent, just go to Friends of Fort Fremont. Just Google that. You'll end up on the Friends of Fort Fremont page. And you can volunteer and we have a training session coming up on 29 September. From January through August this year, we've had over 3,000 people come through the visitor center just on those limited hours. So if we could get more docents and more people out there, I think we'd see the use of it and improve.
Definitely. It sounds like you've got some really good interest in it. So it's awesome. And hopefully this helps garner even more interest in people wanting to go out and check it out, because I'm very fascinated. So I can only imagine how many more people want to go check it out and learn more.
Yes, Fort Fremont's a great site. It's amazing. So much history and historical background. You could just feel it when you walk into the courtyard, and you can just see the landscape and see the water, and you can see the actual fort and the water behind it. And it's just a nice area to walk around. When I went out there, I saw people just out there walking and exercising on a nice morning walk, walking their dogs. So people just love to be out there at that area. And there's so much history there.
There really is. It was such a state-of-the-art fort at the time. And it's nice that we have some of the information about it in the History Center now, so that people will be able to share that when they come out.
Just as a side, Beaufort got electricity in 1910. Ladies Island and St. Helena didn't get electricity to the 1934-35.
Oh, wow.
Fort Fremont was producing electricity for lights, telephones, electric motors, that type of thing, in 1899.
Yeah, that is crazy how they are so close together but didn't have electricity.
Right.
Shows the impact of military technical advancements, though, like how they always oftentimes get things first, and then once they can, they roll it out to everyone else.
Exactly. We saw that same thing happen with the space program when we started getting Teflon and Tang and all sorts of things.
Right? Mm-hmm. I know. Yes. So fun. Well, thank you both so much for being here and sharing so much about Fort Fremont. I've had a lot of fun learning about it and just kind of about these little coastal forts in general, because I didn't know that much about them to begin with. So I've thoroughly enjoyed myself, and I just want to thank you both for taking time to be here with us today.
We've enjoyed sharing with you about Fort Fremont. Yes, and hope to see everybody out there.
Yes. If you guys could you give the listeners some information on where they could find you guys' website, phone number?
We have a web page, and to get that, all you have to do is search Fort Fremont, and fortfremont.org is our address there. We also have a Facebook page that you can find by searching for Friends of Fort Fremont. And on these, we have a download that people can use for either Apple or Android to take a virtual tour of the site while they sit in their home.
Oh, cool.
So that's something that the Friends have put together, and I think that will help to entice people to come and visit and see it in person.
I agree.
That's awesome. Well, it was lovely having both of you join us. And before we just do our final wrap-up, Daquan, are there any events or cool things we want to share with our listeners before we go?
Yes. So we're looking forward to the fall season. Fall's right around the corner as we're hitting mid-September to late September. So in October, we have the 28th annual Beaufort Shrimp Festival, downtown Beaufort. It'd be a great time. We love our festivals here in Beaufort. It's a great time for people who love shrimp to get out and try some different type of shrimp entrees and the different shrimp vendors that will be out there at the Henry Chamber waterfront. And then during the shrimp festival, we'll also have the typical Run Forest Run 5K bridge walk. It's a classic. And it's a great chance to get out and see Forrest Gump again this year as he comes to Beaufort every year. And he's such a great guy. And just to be out there and have fun and enjoy as Beaufort transitions from hot summer to cool fall. So we're all looking forward to that.
Awesome. Definitely fun stuff to look forward to and to keep an eye out for. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Intercoastal Podcast. Don't forget you can follow us on social media at @visit_BeaufortSC for Instagram and at @BeaufortSC on Facebook. And we'll talk to you all next time.
See you guys.
Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review.
This has been another episode of the Intercoastal Podcast, part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network, hosted by Natasha Lai, produced by Relic.